This next week, this week, and for the next 5 weeks, we're going to be looking at sermons of the faith. And as we go through these different, hymns of the faith, and we're going to look at a different hymn each week. And as we look at these hymns, we're going to hear some of the stories that have gone on behind some of those hymns and prompted people to write these hymns. And as we go through this, you're going to hear some amazing stories, the way that God has worked incredible miracles in people's lives. You're going to see God's great compassion, His great love. You're going to hear about people who've gone through some challenging experiences in their life, and yet how they were able to cling to God, and God was never going to let them go, and He held His grip, and they became closer to God. And it is going to be a great sermon series. I'm really looking forward to it. And today, we're going to look at the sermon hymn of Great is Thy Faithfulness that was written by Thomas Obadiah Chisholm. Thomas Obadiah Chisholm, who was born in Kentucky, a small town in Kentucky, in 1866. He was born at age 16. He wasn't born at age 16. At age 16, he lived in Franklin, Kentucky, and he was raised in this very, very small town in Franklin, Kentucky. And at age 16, he became a teacher in the one-room schoolhouse where he went to school. Think about that. And then at age 21, he became the editor of the hometown newspaper. So his life was going pretty well, actually. But then, if you start to look at his life, things don't go so well. I mean, he had this great experience. At age 27, he became a follower of Jesus Christ. He had a complete spiritual awakening. And that was such a profound experience in his life that he decided to study into the ministry. And he became an ordained minister at the age of 32, and he was installed in the Methodist Church. He was there for a whole entire year. And then his health gave out, and he couldn't stand the workload anymore, and it was too difficult for him. So only after 1 year of the ministry, this is so depressing. I don't know why, but he left the ministry and became a life insurance salesman. And that was what he did for the rest of his life. He sold life insurance. Now, this really resonates with me. I don't know why, but if you've ever studied the people that go in, you know, and go into the ministry and look at the amount of preparation it takes to get there, and to think this guy spent all that time, and then he goes, you know, and he becomes installed, and he's ordained, and he's at a church, and he's preaching, and all of a sudden his health gives out, and he can't do it anymore. It has to be the most depressing thing in the world. But it gets worse. Neva Krieger sent me about 2 months ago an email to this website called Wolfram Alpha. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's a new website. It's kind of like Google, except you put in there things or dates or places or people, and it pulls up different information about them. It'll do nice charts and graphs and things like that. And I was just curious because my mother was born in a small, you know, small city. Wolf City, Texas, population about 10, and she went to a one-room schoolhouse, and so I was curious to know how similar it was, so I was trying to find the population of this Franklin, Texas, Kentucky, back in 1866, and of course, the data doesn't go back that far, so we have no idea, but I'm pretty sure that there wasn't a whole lot of people living in Franklin, Kentucky, back in 1866, but here's what really bothered me. I'm looking at Wolfram Alpha, right? And at the bottom of the page from Franklin, Kentucky, it lists all the famous people who came from Franklin, Kentucky. And they list two people. The first one is the actress Annie Potts. I know, none of you ever heard of the actress of Annie Potts. The other one is physicist Homer Neal. I know, none of you have ever heard of the physicist Homer Neal. But I'm sure all of you have heard about Great is Thy Faithfulness. I'm sure all of you have sung that hymn and been comforted by that hymn. And the question is Thomas Obadiah Chisholm even mentioned as coming from Franklin, Kentucky by this website, Wolfram Alpha? And the answer is no. He doesn't rate. Apparently in 1866, when Thomas Obadiah Chisholm was born at the tender age of zero, according to Wolfram Alpha, he remained a zero for the rest of his life. Nobody big, nobody famous. all these great hopes and dreams. You know, he had this conversion experience. He comes to the ministry, but then everything just comes crashing down because of his health, and he has to leave and sell, of all things, life insurance. You know what's interesting? I wasn't going to mention this, but I just have to mention this. I'm working on my sermon Friday. Who calls me? My life insurance agent called me. I'm thinking, well, Lord, what is it that you want me to talk about in this sermon? So anyway, I think it's that there was such a change in his life, how depressing it must have been to have one hope and dream and to have it shattered to something else. And then when Thomas Chisholm wrote this hymn, he had in mind our text from the Old Testament lesson today, from Lamentations chapter 3, verses 19 through 20, and more. You see, Israel also had their hopes and dreams shattered. This Lamentations was written in 586, most likely by the prophet Jeremiah. As a matter of fact, it comes right after Jeremiah in the Bible. And the preface of why they wrote Lamentations was because Israel had been conquered, and now all the Jews were being deported out of Israel, and they were going to Babylon. And they had no idea whether or not they were going to ever return to Israel again. And I can't even imagine what it must have been like for like the prophet Jeremiah or all these people that were following God to have them all gathered up and to go out of exile, out of the promised land. I mean, these are the people that God rescued from slavery. These are the people that God brought into the wilderness and fed them with manna, and the water came out of the rock, and then they crossed the Jordan, and they were in the promised land, and they had arrived, and God brought them judges and kings, and it seemed like God was blessing them. And to have it all end up that they're being deported and leaving the land that God had given them, it must have been horribly depressing. All the dreams, all the hopes, everything that was going in their life just shattered. Lord, has it really come to this? You were so much loving us and blessing us. We are your chosen people. You said that we would bless all nations, that all nations would be blessed because of what you're doing in our life. And now you're taking us and you're deporting us and we may never come back. It was a horrible feeling. It was a horrible thing. And I imagine that this Thomas Obadiah Chisholm must have felt the exact same way. These hopes and dreams that he had in life, you know, he was a young teacher, and then he was at age 21, he became the editor of the local newspaper, and he had all these dreams and hopes, and he's going to be a pastor. And then they all become shattered because of his health. He was just a frail man. He couldn't handle it. And so he went to the second career that he had in the mind. How many of you in your life have had hopes and dreams of what you thought God was going to do in your life? Maybe when you were young, you said, you know, Lord, when I grow up, I want to be a physicist. Or Lord, when I grow up, I want to be an actress. Or Lord, when I want to grow up, I want to do something that helps other people. Or Lord, when I grow up, I just want to serve you. It doesn't matter what it is. Lord, I just have all these hopes and desires and dreams in my life. When I grow up, I want you to use me. I want you to make my life great. Lord, and yet, when life happens, you know, and it moves on, and the dreams that you had, they don't necessarily happen, and it seems like God charters a different path for you. And some people get really upset by this. They get so, you know, the movie Napoleon Dynamite. I don't know if you've ever seen that movie before, but there's a guy who never made that last pass, you know, and it completely affected his whole entire life because he was never able to complete that pass. Or, for example, in the movie, my favorite movie of all time, which is The Princess Bride, Inigo Montoya, you know, he wants to kill the guy who killed his father, and he's been preparing for it his whole life, and he gets to the end, and the six-fingered man, you know, gets him with the sword, and he says, you mean to tell me you're going to fail? This whole entire life you've been working on trying to kill me, and now it looks like I've just killed you. What a pathetic ending to your life. Think about who's been in the news this week. Lindsay Lohan. You know, she had a promising young career as an actress. She's a very talented young lady. She was going to go, and she was going to be a great Disney actress, but then she got off on the wrong path, and she started doing things she shouldn't do, and now this last week she was sentenced to jail. And you think, you know, how did you get from there with so much hope and so much dreams, and now you're sitting in front of a judge bawling like a baby because he's about to send you to jail? How many of you have had those things happen in your life? Or Steve Irwin, the crocodile hunter. I mean, that's the one that still gets me. I mean, here he is, this great guy who does incredibly dangerous things and picks up snakes that you should never, ever, ever pick up. He looks at snakes that you should never be that close to, scorpions and all that sort of thing. And what happens? He's swimming with a manta ray, and he gets killed. Do you know how many recorded manta ray deaths have been in the whole entire history of the world since the beginning of time? 17. And he was one of them. And you think, man, he had so much hope and so much potential. He was going to change the world, and yet he's dead, killed by a manta ray. If you are a person where your hopes and dreams have been shattered because it hasn't turned out, your life hasn't turned out the way that you thought your life should, I want you to consider this. First of all, it is a very, very dangerous place to be, because a lot of people get depressed about the fact that their life isn't exactly where they thought it should be. But more importantly than that is this. If your life isn't where you thought it would be at this point in your life, maybe, just maybe, you are violating the first commandment. The first commandment is, you shall have no other gods besides me. And when you say that your hopes and your dreams have been shattered, you are likely violating the first commandment, because what you're saying is that what I thought my life would be didn't happen, and so my life is worthless. God has no plan for my life. Or what you're saying in your life is that what the world thinks about my life, I didn't meet up to those expectations, so therefore I'm worthless. But why would you look at what the world's expectations of your life are? Why would you be a person that gets on the internet with Wolfram Alpha trying to figure out if you rate enough to get a byline on the internet site and put your hopes and dreams in Wolfram Alpha instead of putting your hopes and dreams in the Alpha Omega, the one that created you, the one that has a purpose for you, the one who works in your life even when things aren't going well? You see, the prophet Jeremiah knew that. And he goes on. It doesn't end at those depressing verses. In verse 19 and 20, he says this, "I remember in my affliction and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I will remember them, and my soul is downcast within me." But then he goes on in verse 21, "Yet this I call to mind, and therefore I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for his compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness." That's the text that this hymn comes from. "I say to myself, the Lord is my portion. Therefore, I will wait for him. The Lord is good to those who have hope in him, to the one who seeks him. It is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord." God has his own timing and his own purpose, and he is working in your life. And even if you don't think that he's working in your life, he is. And that's what the prophet Jeremiah realized. And that's why he wrote this text. Eventually, we know that God worked miraculous things through the nation of Israel. It was through the nation of Israel that Jesus Christ was born. It was through the nation of Israel that God's Son came to be in this life to redeem mankind. Everything that the nation of Israel wanted in their life came true when Jesus Christ was born. They just didn't see it yet. And when they were walking to Babylon, they thought it was the end of the world. But the fact is, God was using that. And God is using you, too. God is working in your life, even as we speak. You may not think that God's working in your life, but he is. He loves you. He cares for you. He died for you. He wiped away all your sin so that he could take your life and use it just like it is. That's what Obadiah Chisholm learned. It's like one of those, I don't know what they're called. And I asked my wife this morning, I'm not sure she understood either, but it's one of those cards, you know, and it's got the holographic thing on it. And you look at it one way, and you get a picture of one guy, and you turn it another way, and it's a different guy. You know what picture I'm talking about? You know those cards? You see, That's what God, the world is looking at you this way. But see, God's looking at you this way. He's got a different view of you. He knows exactly what he's doing in your life. And he's loved you and he's redeemed you and he's got a great purpose for your life. And you need to know that. And even when we don't recognize it, even when we fall prey to what the world thinks about us, he still is God in our life and he is still faithful. Great is his faithfulness. That's what Thomas Chisholm realized. He lived to be 94 years old. So even though he's a frail guy, he lived a long time. And he died in 1960, which was just 2 years before I was born. So you can do the math, figure out how old I am. But in a letter, when he was 75, he was going back, he wrote a letter, and he was reflecting on his life and all the things that happened. He said this. He said, "My income has not been large at any time due to impaired health in the earlier years, which has followed me until now. Although I must not fail to record here the unfailing faithfulness of a covenant-keeping God, and that he has given me many wonderful displays of his providing care, for which I am filled with astonishing gratefulness." Great is God's faithfulness. If you don't think God can use you, if you don't think you can be great, understand this. The reason why any of us are great is because God is great and because his faithfulness is great. And no matter who you are and where you are, God can use you. I've been waiting months to show you this video clip, and it fits in so perfectly today. So I want you to consider this as we look at ways God has used people.